Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres took the final game. They won a game. They won a game on the road trip. They won a game at Dodger Stadium. I don't know, Ryan. Where do you want to start?
Worst week ever, Kevin. Worst week ever. Worst week ever. Padres go to Chicago. Things look bad there. They go to Dodger Stadium. I actually think they played a little bit better. At Dodger Stadium, but the results weren't great. Four against LA, you lose 3 of 4. I believe the Padres led in 3 of those 4 games, including winning Sunday's finale on TV there. Nothing we haven't talked about at length here, Kevin, but starting pitching continues to be the concern. But the bats seem to be coming around. I mean, look at the runs they were able to score on some pretty darn good Dodgers pitchers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was thinking about this morning, and I can't figure out if that's as good as they think it is, you know what I mean? Like, okay, absolutely. On the basis of the offense was bad, and now for a sustained period of 3 weeks, right? Is it? Yeah, it's 3 weeks. Could be going on 4 here. The offense has been much better. It still could stand to, you know, some guys to do better, but like it's been much better. Okay, so that's great. But you didn't score enough. Like, you scored 6 runs in the first 2 innings and none in the next 7 on Thursday. You scored 3 off Shohei Ohtani, right? Like, and then didn't score any more. And the Dodgers, who are a really good team, like, now maybe against another team, you would have won 6-2 on right. Thursday. Maybe on another team, you would have, you know, Adrian Morejon wouldn't have given up those hits on Friday and you would have won. So, yeah, I think there's merit in saying that they played better. Here's what I will say. Turn it forward. Play like that against the Diamondbacks and see how it goes. That was Craig Stammen's point. That was Manny Machado's point. That's everybody on that team's point. If we play like this, we will be okay. All right, let's see it. 4 games against the Diamondbacks.
Well, and it's a huge week, I think. The final week before the All-Star break, Padres are at home for 7 consecutive baseball games, which was the last time that happened. 7 games in 7 days. You've got 4 against the D-backs starting tonight at Petco Park, and then you've got 3 against the defending American League champion Toronto Blue Jays, who aren't necessarily playing great either. But I think this will be a much better barometer in terms of where the Padres truly stand than playing the Dodgers, whatever it was, 7 times in 11 days.
I like what you're saying there, because it's like, yeah, look, getting beat by the Dodgers and looking terrible, not looking terrible, the results night after night, just not being there. Right. That's a barometer. But right. You're talking about, like, this is a barometer. We know they're not the Dodgers. So why are we comparing? Why are we saying that going 2-5 in those games is such a bad thing? Yeah, okay, look, let's shelve that. That's another time. Okay, fine. If you beat the Dodgers in October, that's a capital I, capital F. The barometer now is, 3 of the next 5 series, so that's these two series and the 3 right after the All-Star break leading up to the trade deadline are against National League contenders. The other two, the Blue Jays, an American League contender, because regardless, they have the money, the wherewithal, the desire to go out at the trade deadline and compete in a crappy American League. And then the Royals. So this is, I like it, Ryan, this is the barometer. Are the Padres contenders or pretenders?
Right. And this isn't us, again, making excuses for the poor play, especially in Chicago. This isn't necessarily us making excuses. This is us being realistic, which is there is no team in baseball right now better than the Dodgers. The Dodgers have the kind of talent and better depth that can beat anybody all the time. I mean, they're very, very good. The Arizona Diamondbacks, and we've been saying this for 3 freaking years on this podcast, Kevin, worry about the Arizona Diamondbacks. Worry about beating the Arizona Diamondbacks more so than worry about beating the LA Dodgers. If you can beat the LA Dodgers, good for you. You weren't expected to. But beat the Arizona Diamondbacks. Right now, they're tied for 2nd place in the National League West. Yep. They're both chasing wild card spots, the final wild card spot that's out there. Again, too early to talk about wild card spots, but this is where they are.
Yeah. You know why it's not? Because like the trade deadline is like an artificial deadline. I think it's okay to talk about wild card spots right now. Yeah,
right. They're both 1 game under .500, 44-45. To me, Kevin, if you can win 3 of 4, or and you're going to laugh at me, even sweep this 4-game series at home, you can not only improve your chances here, but you might tip the Diamondbacks a little bit more towards being sellers, because the Diamondbacks, just like the Padres, I think could go either way at this moment. Mm-hmm. They could decide, hey, we're going to push our chips in, or they could decide, maybe we reload for next year, right? Diamondbacks have some tradable pieces just like the Padres do.
Yep. I like that because, you know, while the team that comes out on the losing end will say, well, we still have time. That will be true. They'll be able to say that, but you're that much closer. You know, you didn't take care of business here head to head, and you, whatever, let's say one of the teams wins three or one of the teams wins four, you know, you're in a bad way. You're in a bad way because they're both coming in 44, 45, I believe. So, you know, now you're even further back, and the, you know, it appears like the Marlins are quote unquote for real, right? Like, you know, the Pirates seem to sort of like, okay, quote unquote for real. Like they're at least nuisances, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I absolutely agree with you. This is, man, this is just gigantic.
Yep. And if we're comparing those four franchises, right? The Padres and the Diamondbacks, I think, have the desire and the capital to make a push if they decide that they're any good. I don't know that the Marlins do or will. I don't know that the Pirates do or will. To me, this is a, if you can come out ahead of the Diamondbacks here and maybe tip them a little bit more towards being sellers, then you've won that battle, right? And I think that Padres have, for a number of reasons, experience being one of them, some natural advantages over the Pirates and over the Marlins here, if they're all battling for, let's say, one playoff spot or two playoffs.
You would hope so. You would hope so. And I think that's interesting points about the Marlins and the Pirates. And I think it's probably 100% true about the Marlins. They've shown that they don't really have the will. Hey, if you're good enough, man, go for it, guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at us, Spunky Marlins. Man, I think you're probably right about the Pirates too, based on their history, though they did invest a little bit this year. Man, can you imagine being a Pirates fan? This is when it would really tick me off. Like when you know you're awful and you're in a rebuild and you're waiting, right? And there's just no reason to do anything at the trade deadline or whatever. But now you're close, like, and you have Paul Skeens and you have a decent pitching staff, and your ownership doesn't do anything at the trade deadline, man, now would be the time to be really pissed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's huge. Kevin, let's talk about two Padres here before we get into this Diamondback series. One is Manny Machado, and the other one is a little bit of a surprise. Let's talk about Manny Machado. He's hitting.
He is hitting. He's hitting extra base hits, at least. Yes. You know, he's not chasing, not trying to make stuff happen. All of it is real, like getting his swing in order, calming down, and being Manny Machado, right? Like, depending on how far you go back. I mean, you go back 10 games, he's got like a 1200 OPS. You go back, I think 24 games, it's like a 900 OPS. I mean, we're talking about Manny being on a Manny kind of heater. Normal ones, he'd have a higher batting average. Like he'd have some more singles in there. But I think at this point, you're going to go ahead and take whatever, 14 of his last 18 hits, a double or a homer. Yeah, he's doing it like he said he would. Like anyone who I think has been paying attention said, like, here's how I put it. I'm going to believe that it's Manny Machado till he proves to me he's not. So, I'm going to believe that during this time when we identified what the issues were, that he was going to turn it around to some decent degree. I'm going to believe that. And there's going to come a year, 2027, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, whatever. There's going to come a year where it doesn't happen because he's an old man in baseball terms. That's evidently not this year.
Right. To me, what him getting hot says is this, is that he's not washed, right? And you were the first to report this a month ago, 3.5 weeks ago, that it was a mechanical flaw that kind of got exposed when he tried to retool his swing during the offseason. He's getting back, and I think he looks more like the Manny Machado of old in terms of the way he's attacking the ball, the way he's jumping at pitches instead of – jumping's not the right word. The way he is sort of coiled in striking as opposed to waiting till the last minute and then trying to swing through. To me, that must be comforting, I think, to a lot of Padre fans, some of whom might have thought Manny Machado was finished. He certainly is not finished.
Sure. I mean, you have to, if you're paying attention, it's like a homer every other game now. So, you know, you got, because I think that it got so bad that I understand then every 0 for 4 he had, it, you know, it's like, ah, oh, God, you know, and then, you know, and look, the truth is it's been a bad season and there's still some times he's not coming through, but that's baseball, man. It's why he said yesterday, you know, we're all stupid to play this game. I think a lot of people would sign up for stupid at, you know, career earnings around $500 million. But his point was spot on. It's a difficult game. And to expect that there won't be failure is not, you know, it's tough. But Manny is turning back into Manny. So that's good news for the Padres.
Right. And J.P. Sears is turning into Cy freaking Young, apparently. another good performance from him yesterday when the Padres absolutely needed it was terrible in his start before that, was excellent in his start before that. What are we getting here in J.P. Sears? Is it just flashes of brilliance or is this something that they think is sustainable?
It's Cy Young on a severe limit. It's Cy Young twice through the order is what it is. And so, you know, that's it. Like when a guy like J.P. Sears, who doesn't throw hard like at all, but has good stuff, when he is attacking the zone, attacking the right parts of the zone, keeping guys off balance by, you know, look, first pitch probably going to be a strike or going to be a break that goes to a ball and it's going to be a different pitch than you've seen before. Like he's doing it all right. Heck yeah. J.P. Sears is a decent major league pitcher. I think the thing we got to remember is like he's probably the same guy now he was for the A's, the guy who put up the low fives, high fours ERA, right? The A's had no reason to send J.P. Sears up and down. The A's weren't trying to win games for most of his, you know, time there, right? Like, you know, the Padres, they need a guy. Now, yeah. Like, again, if they had better pitchers, J.P. Sears wouldn't even be here. But, like, they came, we all thought, oh, J.P. Sears, and the Padres did too. All right, there's a guy we can stick as our number five. Well, when J.P. Sears isn't on, he's going to get crushed. When J.P. Sears starts thinking like Griffin Canning has, which is, oh, man, got to put this pitch right here, and oh, can't. Going to get crushed. Right. J.P. Sears back against the wall, you know, and comes out and he's firing and he's, you know, not afraid. And I'm not saying he was afraid. I'm saying when he's not afraid and everything is working. Like I said, that's a decent pitcher, man. That's what a good outing last night. One hit, couple walks. One of the walks came on four pitches right after he got drilled in the back of the, you know, basically in the butt, just below the butt. And to go against that lineup, you know, good, really heck of an outing.
Well, and given the way the Padres starting pitching has been, I'll take decent every night. The Padres could aspire to be decent. From the starting pitching standpoint, and that's kind of where
you can get on the offense and say, well, score more than four runs or something, you know, like at some point, like the offense has to step up and pick up for the pitching if the pitching's at least decent. Like it's hard to blame the offense when the pitching's horrible.
No, you're 1,000% correct. Let's get into the pitching matchups here, Kevin. It's four game series starting tonight, Monday at Petco Park. Tonight, Padres send Walker Buehler 5-4 with a 4.61 ERA. Totally thrown. I mean, that ERA is high because of what he had to endure at Wrigley Field, in part to save the bullpen, in part, I think, to give Rodolfo Duran some time to warm up in the bullpen or something. He got shelled. He got absolutely shelled, gave up 9 runs in 4 innings last Wednesday at Wrigley Field. He's been fantastic in his career against the Diamondbacks, 7-0 with an ERA under 2. Does that mean anything? Hell if I know. He goes up against Brandon Pfaadt. Brandon Pfaadt up and down for most of his Diamondbacks career, 1-1 with a 5.40 ERA this year, has pitched 54 1/3 career innings against the Padres in his very short major league career. They face him every time, it seems.
It feels like it, man. I was looking at these probables going, wow, This feels like back in the day when you used to play a division opponent 18 or 19 times. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's just like every time you line up against the Diamondbacks, it's these guys. And they're really like, yeah, Merrill Kelly's been fantastic. Zach Gallen's been fantastic, you know, but like not great guys, but some who match up really well against the Padres.
It's funny that you mentioned Zach Gallen. He pitches Tuesday against the Padres. If you want to face Zach Gallen, now's the time. He's 3-8. He has an ERA at nearly 6.5. He has an 11.02 ERA over his last three starts, which means he's going to shove against the Padres because that's what he does. He has 16 career starts. This would be his 17th career start against the Padres. He has an ERA of 3.38 during that time. Started early this year against them, threw three scoreless, and then took a comebacker off his shoulder and left the game. He goes up against TBA. We can assume that this will be some sort of an opener, right? Or maybe Johnny Brito. What do we think?
Yeah, I think we'll know by today whether it's Johnny Brito. Look, if Johnny Brito was the answer, Johnny Brito would have been up. I don't necessarily know exactly why. It's just that they have some reservations about, you know, certainly they had reservations about putting him in Dodger Stadium, right? So I would think tomorrow would be the place to see what's up. You know, the funny thing is, whoever it is outside of Walker Buehler and Michael King, anybody who comes up is on basically a JP Sears limit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if we have enough time on this podcast to talk about the challenges that presents because, you know, they're bullpens without Jeremiah Estrada and Jason Adam right now. So like, it's just a really interesting thing. Whoever it is, we don't have time to talk about it now, but we still need to be looking and going, what are they going to do to make this starting rotation better? Because this starting rotation is not good enough.
Right. And this will not, I mean, we saw this, was it 2021, Kevin?
Yeah.
We saw this before. You cannot tax a bullpen the way they've been taxing their bullpen or else the bullpen's going to start sucking too.
And it has. I mean, and look, the Cubs can look like the best lineup in Major League Baseball. I've been talking to a couple people over the last few days. Like, you know, remember they beat the Padres. Maybe you remember it was 23-3. And then the next game, they lost 17-1, I think it was, to the Cardinals. That's been the Cubs season, right? The wins, the losses, the guys, all their stars hitting like they can never get out, and guys who can't get on base, same guys. But like the Cubs can be the best lineup in baseball. The Dodgers are the best lineup in baseball. So, okay, the Padres struggled against them. Mm-hmm. But Yuki Matsui struggled. Kyle Hart struggled. Wandy Peralta struggled a little bit. And these guys haven't. That's what you're saying. That's how it starts to show up. And then Adrian Morahone shows he's human. Jason Adam shows he's human. Mason Miller shows he's human. Like, that's how it starts to show up.
Yep. All of a sudden, you're leaking, you're mm-hmm. spitting oil from this is, you're overheating as a ball club, which isn't great. All of a sudden the car won't start. Kevin, are these automobile analogies doing anything for you? No,
they anyway. Really are. They really are. I was just, golly, man. Yeah. That's some word crafting. You must've been a writer at one point.
Wednesday. This is the game that I've circled of these four. I'm super excited to watch Wednesday. Michael King, 5-7, 3.52 ERA. Threw 75 great pitches against the Dodgers, and then it all fell apart when he got out. Adrian Morahone gave up a grand slam. Jake Cronenworth booted a ball at second base. Not good. But Michael King coming off a pretty darn good start, and he goes up against Jose Cabrera El Cayman. Do you know this? The Cayman. Cayman's like a miniature alligator. His nickname is the Cayman. He's 0-1 with a 4.73 ERA, 24-year-old rookie. People in Phoenix love this guy.
I didn't know there's the Cayman, El Cayman.
Yes, El Cayman.
Okay.
Which is kind of good.
I that is a good one. I'm always interested in your which one you're circling, which one is your appointment television, and that is a good one. I mean, actually, I think all of these matchups so far, maybe it's just because of the familiarity of everybody, even the whole TBA one, I'm like really interested in all these matchups. First off,
totally.
Because like I could practically write this series like it was a playoff series. And that would be silly because of what's but like that's how almost big I think this is.
Yes. Yes. And then on Thursday, a night game, rare, by the way, no day games this week. So 7:10 on ESPN on Wednesday. And then Thursday, you're back to 6:40. Merrill Kelly making his 5,000th career start against the San Diego Padres. He is 6-8 with a 5.71 ERA. Merrill Kelly, the guy who famously said he didn't want to live in California, which is why he stayed with the Diamondbacks this offseason, going up against Griffin Canning. Griffin Canning, 1-6 with an ERA of 6.71. I guess he's been a little better as a bulk reliever. He has a 6 ERA, which is, I guess, lowered his ERA for the year. But again, two veteran guys having having bad years, both of them. Could be interesting to watch there.
Got to figure out all I want from Griffin Canning. I'm assuming the Diamondbacks are saying this about a couple of their guys. Just give them a professional start, navigate it, keep the team in the game. That's what you're looking for. You know what? Griffin Canning did his job last time. Look, what they paid for this pitching staff, you know, especially with Joe Musgrove and Nick Pivetta out. You could even throw in Yu Darvish if you're going to be talking about money. You know, like, I mean, even though he's not being paid, like the money that this team invested in starting pitching is on the shelf. Then there's Michael King, okay? And then everybody else, you're getting what you paid for. Other than Walker Buehler, you're getting a little bit more. Like, they're just trying to piece this sucker together.
So I was going to ask you that, actually. If this were last year or even the year before, Kevin, I'm looking at this Padres starting rotation. If this were last year, Michael King's probably your 3, right? Walker Buehler's probably your 4. And then all of these other guys are fighting for the 5 spot or somewhere else, right?
Yeah. I mean, you are getting what you paid for with this rotation right now. Like, that's just, you know, whatever. We don't need to rehash all that or look into the future. Like, you're getting what you paid for, and it's a rough go. They need to be better, and they need to get better.
Yep, exactly. And we'll talk about this when the Blue Jays come to town on Friday, obviously. There are a lot of fans and a lot of smart people who would sort of roll their eyes at a typical Dylan Cease outing a year ago, right? Or a Blake Snell outing 2 years ago. I think most Padre fans would take either of those guys in their rotation today. Maybe not at the price. That's the caveat. But, you know, you can do a lot worse than having a Blake Snell or a Dylan Cease throwing 90 pitches and pitching 4 innings.
Because it's funny that you say that, because yes, obviously the price is where that's where we draw the line, right? But like, I saw that Dylan Cease, it might have been Dylan Cease and Blake Snell are like the only pitchers to have a certain amount of, they were comparing him with Jacob Mizorowski, who the other day went like 5 innings and struck out 9 or whatever. And Mizorowski, so that's an off a day for Mizorowski, right? Like, so Mizorowski and Cease, like the only pitchers, and it made me think of Blake Snell, that have done like that, like 10 times or something like that, where you only go 5 innings because you're a little bit wild, right? But, and you're also, you know, getting a lot of foul balls, you're striking guys out. And like, I was reminded of the typical Dylan Cease outing, and I had the exact same thought. Man, what the Padres wouldn't give for a typical Dylan Cease outing every 5 days right now.
I know it. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode, and let's do it again today. This is a little bit of a somber one. I, watching on TV on July 2nd, was freaked out by the meeting at the mound that resulted in Freddie Fermin leaving the game.
Hmm.
What is A, walk me through what transpired there and our listeners through. B, what is the level of concern here? Because I'm concerned, just as a guy who watches on TV, it seems like he's taken a lot of blows to the head this year.
Yeah. So not to be like reactionary, like, right, or say that I know more than the Padres or know more than the doctors. I am 100% with you. And my thought is, and this is why there was just no doubt he was going on the injured list. Whatever anything came back, there was no doubt he was going to get a break, because it's just too much. Like, there's just been a lot, and it's the head. And no matter what, and I've got, you know, I know a brain surgeon. Like, I mean, like, and I talked to him about this. I've talked to other doctors about this. I covered the NFL during this time, so my curiosity was piqued. That's like, they don't know everything about it. I mean, you know, like, that's how complicated the brain is. That's how, you know, there's still this sort of burgeoning science of concussion. And obviously the last 10 years learned a lot. And the more you learn, the more you go, hey, whoa, we need to pump the brakes here. We don't know what's happening inside of this guy's brain. Anyway, that's the scary part. I just don't get why people don't get that. That's the scary part about brain injuries, is we don't know. Like, mm-hmm. So Freddie Fermin gets hit, doesn't look bad. Freddie Freeman throws the ball right back. No problem. Everybody's great. Doesn't even, the umpire doesn't really even take much time. Okay, all good. Goes out, and he, and this is got to remember too, the player can't be trusted. The player wants to play. The player's in the mindset of playing. And it's his teammates that notice that he's not speaking right. He says something about dizziness, but he's walking back to get back in the game. And no, like the Padres are watching him carefully, but there's no real sign. And the players, his teammates, are the ones that say, let's check this out. And right away, as soon as they were going out, you knew that Freddie was coming out. They weren't going to go out and check on his head. And, oh, okay, yeah, Fred, you say you're okay? Yeah, no problem. So that is the scary part. I hope all that craziness I just talked is exactly why it's so scary, because there's so much unknown and it's the brain, you know, that's pretty important.
Yeah. To me, the thing that I think freaked me out a little bit was Xander Bogaerts. And you could see in that meeting at the mound, Xander Bogaerts kind of looking over for me. And I believe it was Stammen coming out like, you know, like no, not good. To me, that's, you know, the Padres, and not to make this a baseball conversation, but this is a baseball podcast. The Padres dealt two starting pitchers, two guys who would have been mainstays in this year's rotation. That doesn't mean they're good. That means they would have been mainstays in this year's rotation at the league minimum, because they believe Freddie Freeman could catch every day. He's never done that before in his career, in his big league career. He's always been Salvador Perez's backup. To me, the day-to-dayness, I don't know that he's durable enough, and it's not his fault. My goodness, it's not. But, you know, how many games is he going to catch this year, Kevin? 58? Is it 65?
Yeah, he's going to catch less than he caught as Salvador Perez's backup, because Salvi started to be DH more. I mean, Freddie Fermin's caught 80 games before. So, right. Like, yes. At the time, you say, you need a catcher. These are just guys. Bergert and Kolek. Mm-hmm. But you're 100% right. Like, you took a chance to make Freddie Freeman your number one catcher, and you don't have two guys that you could use now. Mm-hmm. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. You know, and then not only that, melding baseball and, you know, health. Even if this guy was hitting 800, you just can't rush him back out there, and he's not.
Well, and maybe if there's any maybe saving grace here, it's that it does not appear as if they're going to try to rush him back. Right. He's not playing well to the point where they wouldn't be rushing him back anyway. You know, it's more Luis Camposano and his 9-something OPS. Okay. You know?
Yeah. But hey, Campy took some real good at bats last night. So yeah, I mean, you know, but yeah, it's, I think, not to, we're veering on a lot of tangents here, but like, the Ethan Salas, that's why everyone is so desperate for Ethan Salas to be good, because this catcher thing has just gotten frustratingly out of hand in terms of the Padres' inability to have a decent offensive catcher.
I covered college football. I spent a week at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center doing a project on concussions. You covered the NFL. You don't think of baseball as a place where brain injuries happen, but my goodness, they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, look at, that's, you know, Austin Nola, and he wanted to play and he just kept playing. Jake Cronenworth, really smart guy. Wasn't seeing pitches, felt hungover all the time. You know, like could hardly keep his balance sometimes, had to wear his sunglasses at times that he didn't otherwise. And yet kept playing. You got to be careful with these guys.
Absolutely, you do. 4-game series, Padres Diamondbacks, starting tonight at Petco Park. Then the Toronto Blue Jays come to town, and then the All-Star break. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.